Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. I'm joined today by our regular contributors, Joan Osaer with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. For a government agency that's pretty much flown under the radar for most of its 80-year history, the Export-Import Bank is getting a lot of attention recently. While its mission is to provide loans, insurance, and other types of financial assistance to companies that manufacture or do business in the U.S. and then ship it overseas, it's now at the center of a big fight in Congress over just what exactly is the role of government in business. And Joe, why is the Export-Import Bank, or Ex-Im Bank as it's called, under the microscope in Congress?
Well, this all began a couple of years ago when, for the first time, some Tea Party members and basically right-wing ideologues complained that the Export-Import Bank was an example of crony capitalism that was government interfering in business in a way that it shouldn't, and sort of giving advantages and so on and so forth. That mushroomed, although it was reauthorized 2 years ago, that mushroomed into a giant furor this time around, to the point where the new incoming majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, has basically said on the record that he doesn't think the Export-Import Bank should be reauthorized, and he would, if he has his druthers, will let it run out at the end of September when its charter is up.
Ron, is that an accurate portrayal of what the bank does?
Well, you know, the bank does a lot of things. One of the things it does is give what would be called, in some cases, loans to customers of big companies like Boeing. Other people call it unfair subsidies to large businesses. The truth is that it helps a lot of mid-sized businesses, too. I think that if we're going to focus on the issue of crony capitalism, Ex-Im Bank is like the last on the list of things that one would focus on. But I think that it does draw front and center this problem. And there's a growing sense of populist rage around this idea of an entitled elite that moves between Wall Street, the biggest corporations in America, Washington, and crafts rules that to a lot of people seem unfair and seem to disadvantage the little guy.
So, Joe, do you think that there's a likelihood that the Export-Import Bank will go away?
I think there's a striking possibility. One of the reasons this has become a target is for political, tactical reasons. It's one of the very few things where if you do nothing, you put it out of business. If you don't hold a vote. If you do hold a vote to reauthorize it, it will almost surely pass. But you've got a situation now where the head of the House Financial Services Committee, Jeb Hensarling, is violently opposed to the Ex-Im Bank. You have the majority leader, new majority leader, saying that he won't support it. And you have Speaker Boehner basically saying he's going to take a hands-off position. So there's actually a pretty decent chance that its charter won't be renewed.
You know, one of the most fascinating things about this case to me has been the way in which it's galvanized this unlikely combination of allies between the far right and the far left. So you have Tea Party folks that don't want things like the Ex-Im Bank around, mostly on grounds of national sovereignty and issues of the entitled East Coast elite. Then you've got a lot of left-wingers who feel that actually this is part of an entire trade debate. They feel that the debate is no longer about protecting U.S. jobs, but it encourages outsourcing of our manufacturing base. So there's this sort of interesting and very unusual set of bedfellows around this issue, and that's what makes it potentially such a hot topic.
One of those potential bedfellows is Ralph Nader, who has actually written a book quite recently about this coming coalition of left and right, progressives and libertarians, essentially, who view capitalism in much the same way and crony capitalism in much the same way. And in fact, later today, he's meeting with the Cato Institute.
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say, is Ralph Nader's next meeting then with the Koch brothers?
I would be really eager to sit in on that meeting. I just want to say if it ever happened. I don't know if he's met with the Koch brothers, but I do think that this alliance is just getting started. And, you know, the victory recently of David Brat over Cantor.
Eric Cantor, who was the former or is now stepping down as the majority leader.
That's right. In the Virginia primary was so stunning. And it has a lot of Republicans worried because there are people not only on the right, but on the left that agree with his policies, not only around trade, but around tax loopholes for billionaires, special treatment for big corporations. So I think that we're just beginning to see what the political impact of this could be. And one impact is that it could put more Tea Party members in government in the midterm elections, which could then change the tenor of the 2016 presidential elections.
You know, the Tea Party perspective on this is that the government really shouldn't be in the business of choosing winners and losers when it comes to business. Is this something that you think we will see more of?
Well, one of the things this really speaks to is the degree to which people have come to believe that the government can't really do anything right, which is profoundly different from what we believed, say, 30 years ago, when if somebody talked about an industrial policy or an Ex-Im Bank, there wouldn't be any debate about it. There wouldn't be any question about it. But, you know, government has mangled many things, and there's been the rise of the Libertarian and the Tea Party have really given rise to this idea that there's nothing the government can do that private industry can't do better, and so let's just leave it to private industry. And I don't think that's always true, and it's troubling to me that that's kind of where we've come to.
Well, finally, let's take a look to some of the other stories that we're watching. Rana, what's on your radar?
Well, I'm fascinated by the latest banking fraud, which is the accusation that Barclays subject some of its own clients to unsafe trading practices in dark pools. Dark pools are large private trading platforms where customers can come in and do trades and not have them noticed by the market. This is something that a lot of people want to do if they don't want to give away their market positions. There's now a case accusing Barclays of actually inviting predators into these dark pools to eat the other smaller investors. So I'll be watching what happens there.
Joe?
Well, we've had the smartphone wars. Now we're going to have the smart watch wars. Google had its development conference, big development conference this week, and one of the things that came out of it was Google is really pretty close to introducing a smartwatch. In fact, you can order one from Samsung now, although you probably won't get it right away. And, of course, Apple has a smartwatch that, as everybody says, is coming out very soon. And so, you know, the smartwatches are going to have health apps, and they're supposedly going to be able to, you know, read some of your emails and look at your watch instead of your phone. I don't know if that's an improvement or not. But I'm looking forward with great anticipation to the smartwatch wars of 2014.
So we don't really use our phones to make phone calls anymore, so will we use our watches to actually tell time?
It seems highly unlikely.
How big are the screens going to be? I'm getting worried about this already.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org. You can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.